Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Mandalorian Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to a galaxy far, far away. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage of the Disney Plus original series, The Mandalorian.
In this podcast, we'll be discussing our personal Star Wars backgrounds, our general thoughts on the first two seasons, and our hopes and fears for season three. Be sure to stick around at the end of the podcast for programming notes about other great podcasts coming from us and our podcasting peers.
One of our favorite things about podcasting is getting your feedback. We love to hear fan theories, pickups on details we might have missed, and to hear what folks are thinking about the episodes and seasons overall. You can send us feedback in a couple of ways. You can email us at starwars@thelorehounds.com, or you can head over to our nifty new website and go to the contact page and leave us a voicemail, and then we'll get to those emails and voicemails on the next episodes.
I see the download numbers. Y'all are freeloading. Right in this season, and let's talk some Star Wars. If you want to talk Star Wars with us sooner, join us over on our new Discord server, which you can join with a link in our show notes.
A quick reminder about our Patreon. If you like what we're doing and want to support us directly, check us out at patreon.com/thelorehounds. For just $3 a month, you get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, early access, and more.
Of course, you can always get our ad-supported podcasts on our Firehose feed by searching for the Lorehounds on your podcast application of choice or using the subscription tool at thelorehounds.com. This is especially important because we are launching our Star Wars feed for this show, our Mandalorian feed, so that we can reach some new listeners. We hope that you found us through your little Apple podcast search or a Google search. But if you have, we don't just do Star Wars. We do plenty of other stuff. So head on over to our feed, The Lorehounds, if you want to get all of that.
Lastly, speaking of Apple Podcasts, give us a rating and a review if you've got a moment and you feel so moved. Ratings and reviews really help us appear in those searches, and especially in a busy marketplace like with The Last of Us and with Star Wars related content, the more visibility we have, the more people can find us. The more people find us, the more we can make podcasts.
All right, David, let's give everyone a brief background on what we have in our Star Wars backgrounds, because this is the first episode for our coverage of The Mandalorian, and we may have some new listeners, we may have people who haven't listened to our Star Wars coverage before, so what is your personal Star Wars history?
Well, I saw the original Star Wars in a movie theater with my family when it came out, I think during opening week, and we were traveling at that time, and I can't remember exactly when it was. But we were like on a road trip or something, family camping car trip or something like that. And we saw it in some other city. And then when we came back to my city, I remember the lines around the block and standing in those lines and buying all the action figures and the big trade size graphic novels and all that kind of stuff. So it really lit a fire on us back then when we were kids, because I was the perfect demographic for it. We were constantly, who's got what, action figure and all of those kinds of things. So, and then, followed along with the movies, the two other movies as they came out. And then that was about it. Never really went deeper, didn't read the books, didn't do much else with it, didn't get into the collectible comics. That was never really my thing anyway. And then the prequels came out, and that was painful, very, very painful.
Harsh.
And then, yes. And then the postquels came out. And what was it? What was the first one of those? The first J.J. Abrams?
The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens. That was great. That was a nostalgia hole and lots of, member berries and good times and laughs and then some drama. And then he set up some stakes. And then The second two movies maybe in some ways worse than the prequels for me. Just horrible wrecks of movies that I felt were didn't do anybody any service, even though I know the middle one has got some fandom in it. But I have a lot of issues with it. Not because of what Rian Johnson was trying to do, talking about the Force, but just in some basic movie storytelling plot stuff.
Bringing the hype machine back around, David.
Yes, I'm bringing the energy, I'm bringing the vibe down, right? So that's it. And then we jumped onto Andor, and then Andor was like awesome and amazing. And I think it's one of my all-time top favorite television shows ever.
It awakened our Force, really.
Yes, very funny. But it wasn't Star Wars in some ways, right? It was just good storytelling that was set in a Star Wars universe, even though it is Star Wars, what have you. Other than that, yeah, I've watched all of Mandalorian. I've done it twice now to catch up for our recap. Watched the Book of Boba Fett when it came out. That was a mixed bag. And other than that, I'm a real surface level fan. I don't have deep lore. I don't have deep knowledge. And I've been watching The Bad Batch and, you know, catching up on some of the animated stuff. So, yeah, I'm just sort of your average fan. And I'm really hopeful and wishing. I really enjoyed Mandalorian, especially season two, and I'm really looking forward to season three. Hopefully it's going to be a good thrill ride.
Very cool. Yeah, I was about 10 years old, I think, when Revenge of the Sith came out. So I probably have more nostalgia for the prequels.
Sure.
Than I do for the original trilogy, even though I think that they're better movies, the original trilogy. I have a lot of fun with the Clone Wars era. Mm-hmm. I was, as you said, a surface level fan for a very long time, for my whole life, until Andor. And then I watched Andor, and it just inspired me to go deeper. And since then, I've been binging all the Star Wars media. I got a little obsessed over the winter. I've found balance in the Force since, but I was a little obsessed over the winter. I binged the Clone Wars. I binged Rebels. I binged Bad Batch, and now we're doing a little bit of coverage of that. And I'm really happy to be here. I wouldn't say I'm a Star Wars expert, but I certainly have seen more of it than your average viewer.
So I think we're trying to cut that line of not being so knowledgeable and getting into the esoteric so deeply that we're not appealing to the general public, but at the same time, not complete idiots and ignorant of basic facts of Star Wars history and lore.
Yeah, I think I have enough to point out Easter eggs. I think that's right. Where I'm at. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun this season, especially because Mandalorian is much more Easter eggy than Andor is, even though Andor did have some Easter eggs. Really quickly, before we get into our recap of the story so far, let's talk about what we've already covered. So we mentioned that our first Star Wars coverage was Andor Season 1. We did full coverage of the second half of the season and a quick recap of the first half of the season. We had a season wrap-up where we brought in other voices. It was a lot of fun. Then we covered Tales of the Jedi in one episode just to talk about it and talk about Star Wars animation generally. We've also done one episode on The Bad Batch, season 2, episodes 1 through 5, and we also talked about our thoughts on season 1. You can find all that on our Firehose feed and our Star Wars feed. We also, on our Patreon exclusive podcast, Second Breakfast, we've talked about some other Star Wars things. Like, I know you've talked about Visions, I've talked about the Clone Wars and Rebels. So, we're all about Star Wars right now. We're really hyped for Mandalorian Season 3. I think it's going to be a good time, and I say we get into it.
All right, lead the way.
Season 1. I have a paragraph to summarize here. A Mandalorian bounty hunter named Din Djarin accepts a bounty from a remnant of the Empire. The target turns out to be a Force-sensitive child who looks like Yoda. Over the course of a season, Mando gets a new suit of Beskar armor, creates a team including Cara Dune, IG-11, Queel, and Greef Karga, and faces and defeats Moff Gideon, an Imperial commander searching for the child. At the end of the season, Mando is given a quest by a Mandalorian armorer to find the Jedi and return the child to them. David, what were your thoughts on Season 1?
Overall, I thought season one was good, not great. There were some definitely high moments in it, and there were some parts that I found less entertaining. And even in from episode to episode, it could be a mixed bag. I'm thinking of the first episode where he meets Cara Dune, like this little idyllic village here with these shrimp farmers and stuff. It was a little bit too picture perfect for me, you know, this little, you know, but then, you know, some of the battle stuff was pretty cool. And then the fact that there's an old, you know, Imperial Walker there that the bandits are using, you know, and obviously it's a rip from a total rip from a Kurosawa style movies, you know, sort of a Seven Samurai type situation or Magnificent Seven, if you want to go Western. So, you know, it was like, the plot was a little thin, but then, you know, the battles were pretty cool. And the fact that it drove the story forward and the stuff with Cara Dune was kind of cool. So episode to episode, and even within the episodes, there were some highs and some lows. But overall, yeah, it was good. It was solid.
Yeah, I agree. It was pretty good. The season was pretty good. I came into it recently. I only watched it recently because, again, I was not really watching the shows until Andor. And I went to the Clone Wars and Bad Batch and Rebels before I ever turned on an episode of The Mandalorian. So in some ways, I had an advantage because I was able to have a background on a lot of these things, like who the Mandalorians are, what happened on Mandalore, what happened. I don't know about the Great Purge because that was something that happened post-Rebels, but I had a lot of background on this culture, and I had a lot of background on some of the players that we see.
Mm-hmm.
However, I did get a little tired of the Adventure of the Week in a live-action format. I don't know why, but I am more tolerant of that format in an animated style, maybe because I know it's for kids by looking at it.
Right.
And I do think that it got a little bit tired by the end of the season of these standalone adventures, little action adventures. But they were well done. If you space them out, they're really good. And I binged it, and I think that was part of the folly here.
Uh-huh.
And I think that when we have a new season and I'm watching week to week, I'm going to be having a much better time because I'm going to be able to sit there and get my popcorn and really be there with Mando and Grogu and just cheer them on.
Yeah, interesting. The I think the season one, like, did it really know what it was trying to do or wanting to do? You know, the very first episode where the Mandalorians, you know, coming into this saloon to pick up a bounty. Right. I was like, oh, this is going to be gunslinger Western style stuff. Right. And certainly that plays throughout that tonally plays throughout the entire two seasons. But I didn't understand what the show was going to be. And it felt sometimes like the show didn't know what it wanted to do also. And that was a little frustrating. There were times where, yeah, it was like, wow, this is really moving. Like when he picks up the bounty and he brings, you know, when he meets Werner Herzog and his character, right? Like, super sinister. Wow, this is really interesting. And then, yeah, then, and there's a lot of dark stuff, right? Like, stormtrooper heads on pikes. Like, that's, like, really brutal and graphic type stuff. But at the same time, then it's, like, kid-like. And is this targeted at tweens or teenagers? I'm not sure, because there's some strong storylines that appeal in that direction. So there were at times during season one where I was confused about what this show was doing. And then suddenly we get Baby Yoda and, you know, AKA Grogu. And we're like, well, that was a real, like, head turner. It was like, I was not expecting that at all. Like, there was zero hint. And so when Grogu shows up, it's like, huh, what? Whoa, this is wacky. This is weird. But go with it, because the kid's cute, right? So yeah, I really had a hard time getting into a groove when it was first on, when it first aired. But then on the subsequent watch that I just completed and getting ready for this season, it was like, oh, okay, I get this now. Like, I get where they were going. It felt more complete because I have season two in my pocket as a reference.
Yeah, I think that what was missing from season one was a prime directive. Right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because at the end of season one, you get a quest.
Right.
You get a quest.
Yeah, clear.
Return the child to the Jedi.
Right.
Great. That is the goal of the season, and it connects the whole of season two. I didn't know where they were going with season one. It really was like, will they or won't they? That was basically the premise of season one. Will they or won't they stay together? And I don't know if that was enough to carry that season.
There is so much setup, right? Like, we have to meet Greef Karga. We have to meet Cara Dune.
Right.
You know, he was sort of building his team and you know, meeting different allies and things like that. And so, really, it was like a 8-episode setup season, almost. Like, normally you would have a setup episode, right? Like, okay, here's one episode, maybe 2 episodes. Here's the characters. Here's the stakes. Here's what's going on. Instead, it took him a whole season to set the stakes. And and like you say, to give us a very clear directive at the end, which is return the child.
Right.
And then now we've got a mission, and we know where we're going and what we're trying to do.
And that being said, I had a lot of fun with season one. And
sure.
While I went in wanting to hate the idea of a baby Yoda species person, I mean, the execution of Grogu is excellent. I mean, he's just lovable. He's somehow very deep while not speaking at all.
Mm-hmm.
The puppeteering is really great. The way that Pedro Pascal interacts with this puppet is excellent. And whoever's in the suit too,
Whoever's in the suit, yeah, exactly.
It is better than I could have imagined, the execution of the Grogu plotline. And I am glad that by the end of season one, there feels like there's a point. So why don't we head into season two then?
Sounds good.
I'm going to split this one up into two halves because this was a little more complicated, a little bit more cohesive of a plot. The first half goes, in his quest to find the Jedi, Mando searches out other Mandalorians. A false lead brings him to Cobb Vanth wearing the armor of Boba Fett, which is returned to Mando in exchange for his aid. As his search continues, he finds Bo-Katan and her entourage, who identify Mando as belonging to a Mandalorian cult called the Children of the Watch. Bo-Katan sends him to meet Ahsoka Tano, who identifies the child as Grogu, a former Jedi youngling, who has gaps in his memory. Because of his attachment to Mando, she refuses to train him, but sends him to a seeing stone at the ruins of a Jedi temple. What were your thoughts on the first half of this season?
Yeah, this felt like it had, well, like we said, coming out of season one, clear direction, clear stakes. We understand that that now Grogu and the Mandalorian are wanted. So, like, there's that back pressure going to always be moving them forward. There's the whole lone wolf and cub, you know, storyline of the father that is not a father and the child that's not a child. And that's fraught, right? That relationship has a lot of tension built into it because it's like, I'm your de facto parent, but not really. And I'm like, I'm trying to, you know, deal with you with this stuff. Yeah. And then we get to meet other, you know, Mandalorians, Bo-Katan played by, you know, Katee Sackhoff, who is a sci-fi great. If you're an old, you know, a Battlestar Galactica reboot fan, you know, she was Starbuck and, you know, we love to see her. And I think she did some voice work for.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she played Bo-Katan in the Clone Wars and in Rebels.
Okay, so that's some nice continuity there.
Yeah.
So, and I think we've got the when we meet Ahsoka, that episode was just awesome. That was like visually awesome. Tonally, it had a great vibe and tone to the whole thing. It felt like a great kung fu action style, you know, movie where, you know, we get our final battle with the big bad and, you know, we get a lot of interesting backstory. We finally learn about Grogu. So it was a really, really well done episode, I thought, in terms of building the lore of Grogu, building the lore a little bit more of the Jedi, a little bit. But then just telling this like really badass Western, you know, kung fu style action movie. And it felt really seamless. And visually, it was gorgeous. I think it was one of the best looking episodes so far.
Definitely. Definitely. I will say two people are full of shit in this episode. Well, maybe not this episode, but this season so far.
This half of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Bo-Katan is completely full of shit because... Mm-hmm. If you have been following the Clone Wars and Rebels, Bo-Katan is first introduced to us as a member of Death Watch, a cult, a Mandalorian cult, on the planet of Concordia, which you'll recall is also the planet where the Children of the Watch were and how they escaped the Purge. And she was involved in this group that was basically committing terrorist acts on Mandalore, which was a pacifist nation at the time, led by her sister, Satine. and her efforts with pre-Vizsla, which is a different Vizsla than we see here, get her sister killed and get Mandalore ruled by Darth Maul for a time.
Okay.
So, my point is, her giving Mando, giving Din Djarin, an attitude about being in a cult that kind of shares a nomenclature with her cult, Death Watch, Children of the Watch, I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. Dude, you're just a bad leader. I think you got a lot to atone for, and I don't think you've done it. I think the Bo-Katan, and you know what? I'm glad that she exists in her state. I'm glad that they didn't do some weird redemption arc. I honestly think that they are playing her as someone who is a flawed character, who has a lot of pride, who thinks that they deserve to rule Mandalore, when I don't know if she's ever really proven that.
Well, you got a real bee in your helmet here.
Oh, yeah. About her. I want to fight Bo-Katan, although I'd lose very badly.
Sure, yeah. You can fight her for the Darksaber. Well, she doesn't have the Darksaber now, anyway. So.
Well, yeah, she has no claim to it.
Right. I will say, all issues of Bo-Katan aside, it was cool as hell to see a group of Mandalorians kicking ass like that. You know, and I thought that episode was a lot of fun, just visually, with the ships and the port and that Imperial transport ship. All of that stuff was really great. And I had no idea that Bo-Katan was this sort of flawed character, not being that adept in Mandalorian history.
Very much so. The Darksaber, it's mentioned in Book of Boba Fett that it's gifted to her. The Darksaber was gifted to her at one point by Sabine in Rebels. Mm-hmm. So that is what they're referring to. Sabine is a Mandalorian who is part of the Rebels crew in that series and eventually returns to her home and her family. She has a lot of complications, too. She created a weapon that specifically targeted Mandalorians for the Empire. Mm. And that was no good. That was no good. It melted them in their suits. It heated up their suits to the point where they were made into human jelly, basically.
Ooh, gosh.
Nice for a kid's show, right?
Yeah, that's pretty dark. You know, with Mandalorian, like, there's some really dark stuff here, like ice spiders and, heavy weapons, you know, like ripping through buildings and, you know, grenades going off. I mean, it's a pretty violent show overall.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, baby Grogu committing genocide by eating frog eggs, you know?
Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about that. What a weird plot line. That never paid off either. He's just doing it.
Yeah. And then sort of last of that species. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to see them again. It was just kind of a strange thing. I mean, we had the X-Wing tie-in with those pilots, which are sort of a recurring, you know, little bit, which is fine. But sometimes I don't know where this show is standing. Is it standing in an adult show or is it standing in a kid show? And I think it's trying to do both, I think, clearly. Yeah. So that, you know, if you can sit there and watch this with your 13-year-old or whatever, that's like an ideal Disney Plus viewing experience, right? That's what they want.
Yeah.
They want you and your 13-year-old and maybe your 8-year-old to be able to watch this.
It's no Andor, but it's still a fun time. It's your Saturday morning cartoon that comes out on Wednesday.
That's right.
The other person, who is a little bit full of shit, but less so because it's more understandable, is Ahsoka.
You had two people on your shit list.
I think Ahsoka and Luke more so, but we can get to that later. Ahsoka is just totally learning the wrong lessons from Anakin's fall.
Uh-huh. Okay, so what's your theory of the case here?
Anakin did not fall because he had an attachment to Padme. Anakin fell because he could not be honest with anybody because the Jedi way forced him to be secretive. And then, by the time anybody who could have actually helped him and Padme ended up knowing about this, Obi-Wan Kenobi is basically the only one who ever found out, and then Yoda eventually, it was too late. And he was already seduced by the dark side, by the one person who understood him and let him be honest with him, by Palpatine. It was so easy to pull Anakin to the dark side because the shame culture that the Jedi enforce pushed him away.
And this is because of his attachment to Padme, and they're not supposed to have attachments?
Well, my point is, his attachment wasn't an issue. The issue was the shame in the attachment that of the Jedi way.
That's what I was trying to get to, at the mechanism of the shame.
Right, right.
What was it? Was the attachment? Okay, got it. All right.
So for Ahsoka and Luke later, we can give him shit later, when Ahsoka says, oh, you're too attached to the Mandalorian, I can't train you. No. The point is, Anakin should have been able to be open about his bonds. Grogu should be able to be open about his bonds. They should have their hearts free to love and then not be shamed and not be drawn to negative emotion by their loving bonds.
So, well, I mean, then that would get into a discussion on Jedi belief and culture.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's the big thing, in at least in Empire, was that it's Luke's attachments that are used as leverage against him.
That, well, you know, that's your attachments. Though, right?
Right.
This is another point, and yeah, right. I guess we're just going to talk about Luke now with this too. Luke, in the original trilogy, was given crap about his attachments. The Jedi, the only remaining Jedi, were telling him, oh no, you got to kill your dad. Can't be attached to your dad. Got to kill him. That's the only way. And Luke says, no, the attachment is what can redeem him, is what can bring him back to the light. And he was absolutely right. He used the power of attachment for a positive, and he learned nothing.
Man, you are on fire today.
I am. This is my Star Wars rage cast.
Okay. And you're on me for harshing the vibe.
Listen, I am excited to see how this turns out because I'm angry at some characters.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for them to face the beef.
Okay.
Anyway, Luke does learn his lesson eventually. If you take The Last Jedi at its word, Luke does realize eventually the Jedi way is what let the Sith rise to power in the Clone Wars.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a pretty straight line there. Their arrogance and their rigidity, I guess you could say.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. You can't create a group of people who have no bonds to the world and then expect them to feel a bond to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Jedi way was always flawed, and I think that the prequel trilogy does an excellent job of showing how the arrogance of the Jedi led to the fall of the Republic. And Luke, it took him a while to learn that lesson, but I think he did, and we're just at the stage where he has not learned that lesson yet.
So that, I mean, this whole, I don't want to call it a plot point, this whole thing about the Jedi, then it's really, what you're saying here is giving me a different perspective on what they might be doing then here with Grogu and with bringing Ahsoka and Luke into these ways, and then having Grogu not pick to stay with the Jedi, but to go back to Mando.
He chose love over duty.
Yeah, and which completely flies in the face of some of Star Wars, right? Because Luke eventually does choose love, right? He chooses to love and accept his father.
Right. But then again, he went back and then tried to enforce the opposite.
Right, right. And create his temple and all of that kind of stuff.
But yeah, I think that's what I'm most excited for, is to see this plot line go forward and to see this theme explored of what does it mean to have good Force users, to have light side Force users who don't reject bonds, who don't reject attachment, who recognize the beauty of love and the positives of love and the advantages of love, instead of being so rigid and attached to this code of people who do not exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And that's the end of my rant. Okay. It ended on a positive note.
Very good. What do you got? What do we have more? We have more to talk about in the back half of this season two.
Well, why don't we take a quick break? And when we get back, we'll do the back half of season two. And we're back. David, let's go into the back half of season two. Well, at the temple, Grogu goes into a trance and reaches out with the Force. Mando is confronted by Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, who ask for Boba's armor back in exchange for their aid in ensuring the safety of Mando and Grogu. Grogu is kidnapped by Moff Gideon, and Mando assembles a rescue team including Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, Cara Dune, and Bo-Katan's entourage. They make a rescue attempt on Grogu, which results in a showdown between Mando and the darksaber-wielding Moff Gideon. Mando defeats and captures Gideon, who taunts Bo-Katan about the ownership of the darksaber. As the team is surrounded by dark troopers who they cannot defeat, Luke Skywalker appears and defeats all of their enemies. Mando gives Grogu permission to leave to train with Luke and takes his mask off to say goodbye to him.
So, again, I think this is one of the... I was utterly transported through the entire back half of this episode. I was eager to see each episode. And then at individual times, I was let down in an episode. But then, like, they were able to bring me back with the story and interesting stuff. Like, with the tragedy, I guess, is that the chapter 14 where Grogu gets captured? Yep. The combat scene was just ridiculous. It was like something out of Gunsmoke or Bonanza back in the day. It was just pathetic. And then more troopers just kept showing up, and like we see the empty transport, and then suddenly there's 50 more coming from the other direction. It was just kind of really horrible. That said, then we get Boba Fett gets his armor back on, right? And as a over 50-year-old man, I can sort of feel for him trying to put on his tuxedo after, you know, you haven't worn it in 5 or 6 years. And it's not quite fitting, right? But, you know, to see Boba Fett, you know, kick some ass with his Bantha stick, that was fun. And see some dark troopers, right? Ooh, scary, evil stuff. So it was like, again, it's just like these constant mixed bags of episodes where, wow, there's really great stuff going on here. I'm like really vested. And like, oh, this action sequence is a stinker.
We got to talk about it. What do you think of the return of Boba Fett from the dead?
I was okay with it. I thought, I mean, they were playing it out the entire time, right? With getting the armor back from Cobb Vanth and all that. The crate dragon and, you know, all this stuff. I was fine with it. And it was really great to see Temuera Morrison, you know, back in action and, you know, to see and hear him doing his thing. I thought he was great. And I was fine. You know, from the comic book standpoint of the comic, you know, the fantastical nature of Star Wars at this level, I was fine with it. I think it was cool. I think the first half of a big chunk of the book of Boba Fett was just terrible. It was just felt like a rushed
it was production. Fine.
Some of it was horrible, just downright horrible. But anyway, we'll get there in a second. So I was happy to see Boba Fett back, and I was happy to see, you know, that iconic armor on the screen. So at this level of show, I was happy for that element to be reintroduced to it.
Okay.
And I'm on record of like hating a lot of stuff. So like in the season one with the gunslinger episode of The Mandalorian, where there's the young kid bounty hunter and uh-huh. they recreate the whole Han Solo scene in the tavern. I just hated that. That just pissed me off. It's like, stop being lazy. Okay, now I'm going. Now this is my rant time. You know, just don't rehash things because you can. And I think what I liked about the Boba Fett storyline is that they didn't rehash old stuff. They gave us a fresh take. Yeah, when Temuera puts on the armor, you know, when Boba Fett puts on his armor, it doesn't fit right, right? Because like his body's aged and he's older. Like, that is hilarious. That was funny. That was realistic. It's a new take. So they're giving me an iconic vision and an iconic character, but then they're being kind of in some ways real about it. They're being tongue-in-cheek. They're winking at us a little bit. And it's something new, right? It's not just rehashing the old stuff. You know, we get to see him fire the backpack rocket. Like, we never saw that in the originals, right? You know, so I was quite happy that they didn't just try to retread old tires, but they actually created new space for the character. So I think that's where I could appreciate having Boba Fett back in the picture.
Okay. I do not have as much nostalgia for Boba Fett because, like, sure. I said, the prequels are probably more my nostalgia game. So actually, I thought that Bo-Katan was a better nostalgia train and Ahsoka especially than I felt about Boba
We're both
Fett.
Brand new to me, really. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Boba Fett, I was like, it's fine, but I didn't need it. I didn't need it. I do wish that they would bring in more new characters, especially let go of characters that they have had presumed dead. Because You do that one too many times.
Yeah.
Well, you do that one too many times, and it just starts to feel stupid. It just starts to feel like nothing has a consequence. And you don't want that. You want the stakes to be real. The Last of Us, we're watching that right now. Every time somebody's in a fight, we're like, are they going to die? And they could.
Right.
The Mandalorian's not going
to
die.
We just watched episode 6, and your question to me was like, okay, well, you know, no spoilers, but like, yeah, there's something happening, which I don't want to cross over necessarily. But I think my reply was, part of me, I'm so trained as a TV, modern TV viewer watcher, that I can't believe that certain characters aren't going to be with me anymore, because that's what they've always told me for years and years and years, that if you're dead, you're not really dead.
And as the Who said, you won't get fooled again.
I thought I'm the old man here. I'm supposed to be bringing those references.
I have a vinyl record of that.
Wow, I'm impressed. I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're a musical guy, so you're a musician, so for that, it makes sense. So, yeah, I guess I see your point. I mean, for me, Bo-Katan and Ahsoka are brand new, so I'm like, ooh, cool, who are these people? Whereas, like, oh, cool, you know, Boba Fett, oh, cool, they're doing something different with him. They're not retreading the tire. Like, I was fine with it.
Okay. All right, very cool.
So, yeah.
Let's talk Darksaber.
Yes.
This was probably your introduction to it, right?
Absolutely. Well,
I guess Moff Gideon has wielded it before, but this is the most lore you've gotten about it.
Yeah, and I was watching with my spouse, and we both hit the edge of the couch. We were like, ooh, what's that?
The way that it looks in the animation, I think, is better. It's
okay.
It's just, I don't think that they got the effect right in the live action, where in the animation, it's like the back end of the Darksaber seems to be like delayed in every slash. So it almost looks like a wall of black as it goes, instead of just one thing moving. I wish that they got that in the show. I know it probably was a little bit harder with the visual effects, but I loved that effect in Rebels. And I think if you haven't seen this, look up Darksaber Fight Rebels, something like that. And it's everywhere.
Okay.
Good stuff. And I wish that they got that better. But I love the lore of the Darksaber, and I'm glad it's back. I'm glad that they have this weapon that is... And, you know, it's funny because Bo-Katan is saying, well, you're part of a cult and, you know, you're just doing this. And she's like, yeah, but if I have this piece of metal, I am the ruler of everyone.
Right.
Bo-Katan is full of shit.
Was somebody whispering in my ear for a second
there? I don't know. I didn't hear anything.
I did think it was interesting, like, by the end, by episode 8 there... The Mandalorian's got a Beskar spear, you know, a really nice fresh suit of armor, and the Darksaber. Like, he's like so kitted out, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, well, we're going to nerf him in Book of Boba Fett.
Right, yeah.
It's sort of like the way they did it in a video game where you played the first game and you're starting the second game. You probably don't know this because you don't play video games.
No,
This is generally something that happens if you're playing a not very well-made game series. You play the first game, you get your suit all jacked up, you get your weapons all together, then you play the second game and something happens where you magically lose all your abilities and you have to regain them.
Well, as a dungeon master, I have totally done that to my players.
Well, so. It feels cheap if it's done poorly. And, I don't know how I feel about the whole getting rid of the spear, but let's wait till we get to Book of Boba for that.
Right. I will say, like, in terms of episode to episode, I mean, I already kind of trash talked the Western gunfight in the one episode. There were parts of the Believer that were interesting, and then there were some parts of it that were a little bit silly. But the fact that the whole sequence of them going into the Imperial base and having to pass as Imperial soldiers and do that whole thing and the helmet routine and talking to that other Imperial officer, that was a nail biter for me. I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen here. This is really cool. They're talking about lore and history. They're talking about TK numbers. And, you know, like, we're actually seeing Imperials not just be, you know, mwahaha, you know, mustache twisting, you know, bad guys, but we're seeing interaction and we're seeing like, hey, good job, you know, you brought in the shipment on time. And so I really appreciated that panning the camera around to the other side of the Empire and seeing not necessarily their humanity. I don't want to humanize them too much, but just seeing the other side and seeing that, yeah, there are beings in here. These are people who have emotions and are reacting to things. And then seeing this one really, you know, crazy Imperial officer, he was awesome. Like, that was it. That dude was just chewing the scenery on that scene. It was amazing.
Well, you're talking about a series that has made its mark by redeeming its most iconic villain.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that it's beyond your capacity to just say, yeah, there are human beings who do evil things, but they're still human beings.
And it's interesting because we're watching, you know, we're recording this concurrently with The Bad Batch. And the middle of this season right now, they're really dealing with that whole question of the Empire saying, okay, or well, in the Galactic Senate and sort of all the political power structures are saying, okay, we're done with clones. And now we're going to have this, you know, conscript army. And then you realize that, yeah, you know, we see stormtroopers getting blasted all the time. But you got to remember, that's actually a human being in there. And that's, so to see in that particular episode, The Believer, chapter 15, seeing them high-fiving and cheering, you know, like that, you know, somebody was able to complete a mission successfully. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. These are just people, right? These are just, you know, normal soldiery and a part of the Empire.
They were only following orders.
They were only following orders. Yes. The banality of it all.
So let's get to Luke Skywalker's entrance. CGI Luke.
Yes. Do you
What's
have feelings? Okay, you're asking me first. All right. I think it was cool as hell to see Luke wreck shop, right? Like, and we haven't even talked about the Dark Troopers at all. And so here you, like, I had no idea what was going to happen. And when the X-Wing flew in and the cloak and the hand, you know, watching it on a rewatch, it's like, oh, okay, it's obvious they were signaling this, you know, as it was coming in. But watching it for the, I remember the feeling when we were watching it live for the first time going, oh my God, is it, could it, are they really going to? Oh, it is, ah! And we were just like, whoa, we were jumping out of our chairs and it was like, it was really cool. It was really fun because like Luke, for me, right, like that's the original trilogy, you know, that's big nostalgia, and to see him on screen in that way was great. And it was so awesome to see him just kicking ass and just taking these Dark Troopers to pieces. And it was a mirror of Rogue One when Darth Vader shows up at the end.
I didn't put
and
that
wrecks shop. You know, so like here's father and son. These dudes are powerful, right? And we never really get to see Luke, you know, just clean up like that. And so it was cool. Like, and again, that's maybe a nostalgia thing for me because, you know, that was my I mean, I was always identified with Han Solo a lot more than I did with Luke. My friend Anthony was Luke and I always played Han Solo. But you know, it's a character I grew up with and it was really great to see him in the prime of power. And yeah. Flexing that power.
And a few years after Return of the Jedi, so he's had some years of training, presumably mm-hmm. with Force Ghosts at the helm.
Fair enough. And your opinion of seeing old Master Skywalker back?
They really nailed the saunter, right? They mm-hmm. nailed him walking in very casually, mm-hmm. not ever moving his body, but just moving his hand and decimating these
yes.
Dark Troopers.
Decimation is a good word.
Who, honestly, I'm more scared of them than I was ever afraid of the First Order in the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I think yeah. Moff Gideon and his crew, his remnant of the Empire, is mm-hmm. a way better villain
Very wicked.
Than
yeah.
Snoke and his crew and whiny baby Ben Solo mm-hmm. and that whole deal. Ben Solo, again, missed opportunity. Great promise. Yeah. Did not resolve that well. But anyway, we're not going to complain about the sequel.
We're not litigating
today.
That one.
Too. I yeah. am loving the Moff Gideon crew, and I think that this is a great opportunity to show the terror of the Empire as underdogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Luke coming in and just destroying these people, great. When we saw his face,
mm-hmm. yeah, I was going to
ask. I didn't
ask
think
about
it was
CGI.
Great. I thought it was good. I thought it was pretty good. The voice was pretty good too. The face was not perfect in the animation. I did think that they did a much better job in Book of Boba Fett.
Right. Yeah, they've advanced it. And they did a lot better than Rogue One with, what's his name?
Carrie Fisher.
Tarkin. Yes, exactly. With Tarkin and with Carrie Fisher as well as with Princess Leia. Those were really rough. And so, we can see the evolution, I think, in the technology.
Yeah, definitely. So Grogu going off with Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like this? Did you like him going off to be a Jedi?
I don't know. I think it was the natural, it was where they were taking us with the story. So I accepted it. Absolutely.
Yeah. It made sense with the character motivations, I think.
Yeah. It all went on a little bit too long. I think there was a lot of fat in there they could have trimmed back. And I think it would have had a more emotional, just on the rewatch. I was just like, oh, come on. Like, you know, get over it. Like, we know he's going off and he's going to take his helmet. Okay, great. Just go. And they just really drug it out. And then, you know, they had to bring in a little R2-D2 member Barry there. So, I thought it was good. And I thought it was scripted correctly in terms of like, yeah, he needs your permission and you got to take off the helmet. Like, these are all things that we've been waiting for throughout the season. So I thought it delivered reasonably well.
I agree. I think it was a good setup for the season. And it leads us right into the Book of Boba Fett.
Which was surprising because, when we got what we got in that, it was like not expecting at all.
If they had just done the Mando and Grogu plot lines and done it as like, I don't know, a TV movie or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think it would have been well received. The Mandalorian parts were very good.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. You really did feel the oil and water mixing of two productions and to maybe, you know, I don't know if it's different writers' rooms or what's going on there, but they just really did feel qualitatively different.
Yeah, yeah. I did have a decent time with Book of Boba Fett, at least in the beginning. I think that it wasn't great, but it was not worse than the droids arc in Clone Wars. So,
can I
go ahead?
Speaking of droids, we never really talked about dark troopers at all.
Yeah, bring them in.
I know nothing about like what that technology is. Did they need the blood to activate them to give them sort of, you know, because we're Star Wars is right, you know, plenty of droids everywhere around. Why are these droids any different and what makes them so dangerous? And I didn't quite understand that. And was it because of Grogu's blood? They were taking midichlorians out or something?
All right. Well, this is wild speculation, so.
Okay, well, you're better qualified than I am, so.
I think it could be one of two things with the blood. One, they want the blood to, I don't know, this feels like it goes against Star Wars lore, but to put it in the dark troopers and then they could use the midichlorians for the force. I don't know. That seems like a stretch. Or, you know, they've got the cloning stuff around. Maybe they are working on Palpatine clones and they want midichlorian heavy blood to be able to replicate and just, you know, make more Palpatine bodies, maybe power them up a little bit.
Didn't they say that one of the drawbacks of the original dark trooper designs was the human operator? And once they sort of did something at a certain point, I don't know, is there a human brain inside of there? Or what? Yeah, I have a lot of questions about that. And I don't know maybe if we're in a place to be able to answer those.
I don't think so. I think we're going to have to wait for season 3 for Moff Gideon to have some monologue about how the Dark Trooper was made and whatnot.
Right. Oh, you know, that's a good point, too, is like two things just come to mind. One, dear listeners, you can write in StarWars@thelorehounds.com. Let us know what your opinions are on the Dark Troopers, because we definitely would take some extra information from y'all. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, was it was great to see Giancarlo Esposito after we had just watched him in Kaleidoscope. He looked very different in this part, and I was really paying attention to him a lot more in this, and he was not playing Gus Fring at all in this. He was really playing Moff Gideon, who is a wholly different character, even though both had similar flat affects. They were very different. And so it was kind of cool to see him, you know, just after we'd watched Kaleidoscope, which he was very different in that.
He's a little more cartoonish in the Moff Gideon role, which, you know, I think appropriate for the medium.
Appropriate
for the franchise. Yeah, he was just a little more like, let me wax on my plans, on my evil plans, and what I'm going to do with the blood. And you know what? I liked him. I think he was a good villain. I think
it was really
we'll
great.
Keep going on it.
All right, so you want to kick us off on the Book of Boba Fett here?
Yeah, so let's do this in two parts. Let's do the Mandalorian return arc and then the Grogu arc. So starting off with Mando, back in his bounty hunter career, Mando visits the Armorer and Paz Vizsla, the last remaining members of the Children of the Watch. He has a Beskar chainmail shirt made for Grogu out of the Beskar spear after training with the Darksaber and learning the Mandalore behind it. Mando is challenged to a duel by Vizsla for ownership of the weapon. Mando wins the duel, but admits to the Armorer that he has shown his face. He is told he is no longer a Mandalorian and must cleanse himself in the living waters of Mandalore to redeem himself.
So I really enjoyed this episode. I loved the tone of it. It really reminded me of the Ahsoka episode in the second season of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
They all blend together at this stage, right? Watched so much of it recently. It just had this great tone that carried, that was consistent throughout it. The visual look was great. Just this sort of quiet, weird, culty way that the coverts are, you know, and how they sort of run their culture. I just, I really enjoyed it a lot. And it was fun to see him and Paz Vizsla fight, right? Like,
yeah.
Isn't that Dave Filoni, or was that like his voice or something?
It's in the Jon Favreau.
Favreau, that's what it is. Yeah, it's Favreau.
And Jon Favreau also played another Vizsla, pre-Vizsla. Literally, that's his name. He's not the before Vizsla, pre-Vizsla, who was in the Clone Wars and led Death Watch, which was the organization that Bo-Katan was working for.
Yeah, forget that he's an actor, right? Like, he was in the Iron Man stuff and everything, yeah. And I saw him in a food truck movie once. I can't remember what it was. It was okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, I like this episode a lot. I like at least this part of the episode a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this was probably the strongest part of the whole Book of Boba Fett season, honestly.
Oh, yeah. God. Right?
Just this, like, 20-minute sequence was the best part.
It was a breath of fresh air. Like, it was like, whoa, hey, here we go.
Yep.
So...
very good. I liked that they discussed how Bo-Katan was gifted the Darksaber, and that is why, according to the Armorer, her rebellion against the Empire failed. And it seems like the Armorer blames Bo-Katan on the Empire coming in and destroying Mandalore, which is fascinating. Because if all the Mandalorians banded together, they might have a chance in replenishing the waters of the living waters of Mandalore and getting things back going. Terraforming, I'm sure, is not out of the question here. But yeah, no, the Children of the Watch are not having it with Bo-Katan. And who can blame them? Because she is, I'm not even going to say it.
We're moving on. You've gotten past it. You've got your venom out.
Oh, I'm not past it, but it's in my head now.
No, that's true. Right. Exactly. Fair enough. I really liked the training sequence with the Darksaber and just seeing it's always interesting seeing Din Djarin come into the presence of the Armorer, because out in the world he's a badass, he's huge, right? Like, he comes in and he just dominates a space and he's like the baddest mofo you know anywhere around, right? Within a 5 kilometer radius, he comes into the presence of the Armorer. And suddenly he's meek and he's mild and he's yes man and you know, whatever. And so through the voice acting and the body acting, right, which are two separate components here, they really do a good job of telling us the power structure here between the Armorer and him. So yeah, good deal on the production. I really felt the vibe of all of that.
Yeah, they did a great job. And watching Vizsla, who, again, he mentioned his ancestor is the one who created the Darksaber.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah, watching him try to reclaim it, the same way his other relative, Pre-Vizsla, tried to reclaim, well, he had it and he used it to try to overthrow the throne of Mandalore, and that's what got him killed, what got Darth Maul on the throne, what got Bo-Katan working back for the good guys. Watching him try to reclaim this family legacy and almost succeed, but fail to someone who is an apostate to him, it's almost a double punch in the face.
Yes.
That this guy who just defeated him isn't even a real Mandalorian in his eyes.
So that's a question for me, is when he beats him and she's like, well, you're not a Mandalorian anymore, doesn't he have to take off the armor right then and there? Like,
oh,
he's no longer entitled to that. So, like, I thought that was a little strange, because when he's talking to the marshal, he's like, you're not Mandalorian, you can't wear that armor. And I'm either going to take it off you or you're going to give it to me. So when he walks out of there with his armor, I was like a little bit head scratcher. I mean, obviously we have to do some certain things for the show, but I was wondering.
Rule of cool, like, I think.
I think definitely the rule of cool trumps this. So
yeah. Well, I see. I'm glad you brought in the armor, because the Darksaber made sense to me, because it's not, you know, you're going to rule Mandalore if you have the Darksaber, but just because you are Mandalorian doesn't mean you have a claim over somebody who defeated you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Darth Maul had legitimate claim to the Darksaber at a point in time, and it only became somebody else's later. But the armor, I don't understand.
The question on the Darksaber then is, if you've won it in battle, then you have the right to claim leadership. You're not given leadership. Like, you've still got to do the work of bringing everybody together and doing all the... You got work to do. We're not just going to all fall down and, you know, worship you.
Right. And this is a traditional view, too, because in the Clone Wars era, Mandalore was a much more traditional planet. They were a pacifist nation. They tried to remain neutral in the Clone Wars. They did not declare for either the Separatists or the Republic, though they were much more tied with the Republic, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Satine, which is the sister of Bo-Katan, was in love with Obi-Wan Kenobi, who shared her feelings, but he did not act on them because he's not Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
And, okay. Yeah, so I mean, that she didn't have the Darksaber ever, but she was a respected leader, people loved her, and it was only after Death Watch sort of orchestrated the rise of Darth Maul that she fell.
Wow, there's a lot of lore here. And this is all in the animated. It's incredible.
Yeah, when the animated stuff is good, it's good.
Right.
When it's bad, it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. And I need to get that cheat sheet watch list and get to these good parts, because some of this stuff sounds amazing.
Oh, it is. I mean, the great fights are great. The great lore is great. It's anyway, this is not a Clone Wars podcast.
So let's move on.
With our Book of Boba Fett plot. On Tatooine, Mando visits Pelimoto and gets a new ship. He tries to visit Grogu, but is intercepted by Ahsoka, who convinces him not to let Grogu see him. She takes the chainmail shirt from Mando to give to Grogu. Grogu has been training with Luke Skywalker at his new Jedi School for Misfit Kids, which is being built. Grogu progresses well, but when Ahsoka gives Luke the gift from Mando, Luke worries about Grogu and Mandu's attachment to each other. He gives Grogu a choice between the chainmail shirt and Yoda's lightsaber. Grogu takes the chainmail shirt, flies with R2-D2 to Tatooine, and reunites with Mato, who brings him to Mando. Reuniting during a war between Boba Fett and the Pikes for some reason, Grogu helps Mando avoid destruction from a Scorponok and a Rancor. After winning Boba Fett's war, Mando and Grogu fly off into space.
All right. Problematic episode.
Here on
a couple of levels.
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about the ending battle scene stuff with the Pike Syndicate and Book of Boba Fett. I would just like to talk about Luke.
That's fine. Ahsoka. That's fine. Let's just talk about Grogu. We don't talk about Boba.
No. Oh, so bad. So this is the school that was being built.
Yeah. Luke Skywalker's School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
Doesn't do so well. He's kind of... The interesting thing is he's very arrogant, Luke is, in this sequence. Like, he's very full of himself. Yeah. I'm gonna make this great school, and we're gonna rebuild the Jedi Order, and I know what to do, and I know how we can do it, and you know, I don't think it ends so well, right?
No, it doesn't. I don't think he wins over the heart and mind of Grogu.
No. Well, doesn't this play out in the future even beyond Grogu?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can argue that Luke's rigid adherence to the Jedi Code, to the classical Jedi Code, is what led to Ben Solo's fall, is what led to the fall of his school and his, seclusion and exile.
Right, right. Drinking blue milk on his own.
What was that scene?
Yeah, that was just member berry stuff.
And how was that one of the better scenes of the movie?
I really don't want to go into to that movie. Let's avoid it.
Okay.
Ahsoka and Luke, that was an interesting little interplay there.
Yeah, that was fun because, you know, I if you don't know because you haven't watched the Clone Wars, Ahsoka was Anakin Skywalker's Padawan.
Right.
And she was very attached to Anakin. He was with her till the end until he became Darth Vader. And she denied it for a really long time. It was only after she got into a fight with him in Rebels, which if you haven't watched these episodes, go watch them right now. It's some of the best Star Wars content. It is the Twilight of the Apprentice, which is the season finale couple episodes of season 2 of Rebels. She gets into a fight with Darth Vader, and he's like, hey, I basically am Anakin. And she goes, I don't believe you. My master was never that cruel. And she slashes him, cuts off part of his mask, and sees Anakin's eyes, and it goes, oh, no.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like what they did the same thing in Kenobi, basically, but
right.
They did a better job in Rebels, I think.
Okay.
So anyway, she was in denial that it was him, and then now she gets to meet his son, who she sees the best qualities of Anakin in, I think.
Mm-hmm. And they share something about that, right? She mentioned something about that, like, you know, oh, so like your father or something.
Yeah, yeah. You are just like your father. But I think it was where he was doubting. He said, I don't know if he has it in his heart to do it. Something like that.
Yes.
Really right. Trying to push Grogu to be his best. And that kind of drive, saying he's like his father, that almost scared me a little bit. I was like, what is she saying there? Because I don't know if it was actually a compliment.
Right. Yeah, it was an interesting comment. And interesting, too, about, yeah, Grogu, like, he's there because the Mandalorian basically said go. Right? It's not like Grogu was... What? I mean, he did sit on the stone and call out to the other Jedi, but it just doesn't ever feel like Grogu wants to be a great Jedi. Right?
And he's not going to have his choices made for him. And I appreciate that Mando gave him a choice and then Luke gives him a choice. Yeah. I do appreciate that both of
That's
them
true.
Didn't go, no, you're coming with me.
Right. And yeah, you're gonna do this training regardless. Yeah, no, that's a good point that he did get the choice.
You deserve a choice. We've heard that line this week.
Yeah,
but not
exactly.
Here.
Episode 6 of Last of Us. Go check out our main feed.
Really great show. Go watch it. So, I want to also say, Ahsoka is excellent casting. Rosario
yes.
Dawson is excellent as
totally
Ahsoka. When she
it.
Showed up in season 2,
yeah,
I thought for a second that Ashley Eckstein, I think it is, who voiced Ahsoka in the animated series, was voicing her. I thought that Rosario Dawson was just acting it out. And I realized, as is more reasonable, Rosario Dawson is speaking, but she's getting that Ahsoka voice down so well
so,
that I almost
yeah.
can't tell the difference. You can tell the difference over time, but it really is the right vibe. It's the right tone. It's that right, like, flat tone that's a little bit playful. Really great. Great job, Rosario Dawson. Can't wait for your solo show.
And she's got just the physical nature, just the way that she walks and that she moves. And I just, that episode too, like where her lightsabers light up and she's in the dark behind somebody. It just like, she really has that character down. I'm looking forward to covering Ahsoka when they finally bring it to us.
And I appreciate the attention to detail in her costume, like the little tendrils. I forgot what the real name of them, but the substitute for hair that her species has.
Oh, right. Oh, you're going to get in trouble.
It has like indents on it, though. And it has battle scars, and it mm-hmm. it looks natural. It doesn't look just flat plastic like a lot of things might look. Especially, you know, the costumes were great in the original Star Wars, but every now and then it would look like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't have that. This felt really real, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, David, any other thoughts about Book of Boba Fett before we talk about what we're looking forward to and what we fear?
No, I think it's pretty exhaustive coverage there. There's a lot more to talk about, I suppose, but I think we've summed it up pretty well.
Yeah. All right, well then, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will discuss our hopes, fears, and listener feedback. And we're back. So, David, what are the things you're most looking forward to?
I think I'm interested in seeing more Mandalorians and learning more about Mandalore culture.
That's for top three. How about that?
Top three. Okay, so more Mandalorians. I guess number two will be Mandalorian culture and lore. Because, like, there's the physical, like, just seeing them, you know, fighting and flying around and doing all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm totally excited for that kind of stuff. And we've gotten quite a bit of it in the two seasons so far, but I'm definitely down for some more. Number two, I guess, would be Mandalorian lore and history and that kind of stuff. And then, I don't know where. Well, I'm trying to think. Are we going to see some more Ahsoka? Are they going to touch on that? That would be cool. But then, like, I'm also thinking, you give Baby Grogu a Beskar chainmail shirt, that's got to be used at some point. So, like, what's going to happen that, like, he's going to need that armor? So maybe, I guess, I'm looking forward for the threat. You know, is it Moff Gideon? Is it other Mandalorians? Like, what's the big, bad, scary thing that's going to come? I have no sense of what it's going to be. And I think, yeah, that's definitely what I'm interested in. It's like, okay, what have you got set up for us for the big, bad? I'm excited to see that.
Very cool. I think my top three would be more of the Jedi school. I would like to see that developed a little bit more.
Okay, interesting.
I want to see the return to Mandalore. I want to see the planet.
Yes, okay.
I want to see what actually happened. And I want to have, I guess this is my third one, what happened exactly with the Great Purge? Because that is still a little bit in the dark.
Right. Doesn't sound like it's a purge. They're not great.
Right, right.
That's what I could
but
say.
So. Mandalore has really been through a lot.
Yeah.
There was a civil war. There was, you know, it's just a whole thing. Whole thing. So let's do one each of something that we're worried about. Let's keep it mostly positive, but let's express some doubts.
I think the thing I'm most worried about, and I'm on record with this quite regularly, stop pulling the 77 movies up, you know, the original movies, and recreating scenes and sound effects and doing that kind of stuff. Just stop it. And if you do that a bunch in this season, I'm going to be really upset. They haven't been doing it much, especially in season two, so I feel okay. But that's like the one thing that just gets me no matter what. I think second to that, okay, I know you said one thing, but like the number two thing would just be bad action sequences. Just you have all of Hollywood at your fingertips. People, you know, spilling them, you know, falling over themselves to work on a Star Wars property. Do your action sequences properly, please, people, right? Like those are my two. Because those things break my verisimilitude and take me out of the show. I will suffer a whole lot of other silly stuff, ice spiders and Grogu eating frog eggs and things like that. That's fine. Just don't do those two things and we'll be friends.
All right. Well, now I get to, because you've gone over your quota.
Yes, yes. You can have two as well.
My biggest one is I do not want the episodic nature of this show taking away from the continuity of the main plot.
Interesting. Okay.
I think season two struck a good balance between episodic plot lines and major arcs.
Agreed.
And I don't think season one did as good of a job. So I'm hoping that we just have a repeat of season two. They learn their lesson from season one and they're retaining that style.
Right.
Production-wise, since I'll go later on that, bad deepfake characters. Let's not do it. Let's try to avoid deepfake as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And when we do it, let's do it sparingly and well.
Minimize it. Right. Fair enough. I think that's the same thing for it breaks verisimilitude. It takes you out of the story. It's jarring. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Luke in Boba Fett did look really good. It genuinely did look good. There were only a few things where I went, his eyes aren't moving the right way. But
yeah, it's that uncanny valley stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think most of the time I said, especially when he was just looking straight forward and he wasn't moving his eyes, I thought it looked great. I thought it looked really well. I actually think that the voice was one of the weaker parts in Book of Boba Fett because not that it didn't sound like Mark Hamill, but I think because they had to play with it to make it sound like him, they were nervous to have the voice emote much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very flat. And I don't think that they allowed I don't know how they made this voice, but whoever voiced it or whatever computer program they made do it, emote at all. I think that it was very straight, and I don't know if I like that.
I think Mark Hamill smoked one too many packs of Marlboro Reds and a few too many whiskeys.
Oh, yeah. He played the Joker too long, and now his voice is wrecked.
Right, that's right. So,
well, David, I think it's time for our listener feedback. Just a reminder, you can send this feedback to StarWars@TheLoreHounds.com or you can go to thelorehounds.com/contact and leave us a voicemail, which we'll play on the next episode.
Yeah, so these are a couple of older emails that came through. And I think with our Star Wars coverage, right, whatever this next Star Wars podcast is we're just going to bring those feedbacks up so we keep things rolling. We had Dan write in, and Dan says, very appreciative you guys have convinced me to give Andor a shot. So that was a while ago. I was one of those Star Wars fans that fell out of love after watching the sequels and whatever the hell the Book of Boba Fett was. Well, yeah, we were just talking about that. Now that I'm fully back in, I have a question as to where to go next in the Star Wars universe. I haven't watched any of the animated shows and I haven't seen the prequels since they were in theaters. I want to get back in, but I'm not really sure where to start. Sell me something. Appreciate the hard work you've put in to educate and entertain us. So, John, I think this dovetails really nicely with what you were talking about before with the animated series. Like, where should Dan go? What should he pick up? Does he? Because I know I bounced off hard off of first early episodes of some of the animated stuff. So, how should he go about this?
You know, other than Bad Batch, because that actually had a very good pilot. The animated series have started off very juvenile, very kid-like, very much targeted towards a very young audience. However, at their height, they're really amazing. So, I'm going to give you a few options on Clone Wars arcs. The Umbara arc, self-contained, about the clones, about the relationships between the clones, and it does not really touch on the major Clone Wars arc. So I think that that's a good way to get a taste of the Clone Wars, of what the Clone Wars can offer, and at its best.
So the Umbara, he could just Google for that, Umbara arc.
Right, yeah. If you just look up the Umbara arc, I think it's three episodes, and you can just find out what that is.
Cool.
Another arc. In fact, I'll just plug the whole thing. I think we're going to be covering a few Ahsoka-centric arcs that are really good arcs in our Ahsoka preview series. So if you want to start on that, we're going to be covering for sure the trial of Ahsoka Tano. So there's an arc you can look for there. The Rogue Jedi, I think, is the first episode with it, or maybe one of the middle episodes. And we're also going to be covering the Siege of Mandalore, which is the finale of Clone Wars. Now, I wouldn't recommend starting with the finale, but it is a banger. And that's that. I think that those are some good recommendations. And I did mention before, Rebels has a really great finale of season two. The last two episodes of season two, Twilight of the Apprentice, some of the best Star Wars content I've seen, full stop. So that's my recommendation to you, Dan. And I think that we discussed this on Second Breakfast already, but thanks for writing in.
Cool. So we have Peter O. And now Peter wrote in a while back, and I didn't pick up his email in a timely manner. And so some of this is a little bit dated back to the Andor stuff. And Peter and I traded emails, and I apologized for missing it. And he wrote in that a pretty interesting email with lots of details comparing British colonial history with that of the Empire.
And it was the length that would justify the text crawl at the beginning of a Star Wars movie.
Longer.
But I longer loved it, than Peter. That. I did enjoy it.
Really, really fascinating stuff.
It should have had the text crawl so that you really had to linger on the lines.
That's right. Peter had originally written into during the Andor coverage, comparing the naval officer that was bested by Luthen and sort of comparing that to the British Royal Navy. And a couple of things that he points out in his email is that him being an Irishman who has emigrated to the United States, he was remembering back when he was in school that, you know, they really taught a lot about the British Empire and that British history, colonial power, and how terrifying for a lot of nations seeing a British man of war on the horizon would be. So, like, I think that sort of echoes the point of, like, if an Imperial Star Destroyer shows up on your, you know, on your tail, like, that's a terrifying thing. I mean, we see Star Destroyers get made fun of and blown up and treated quite badly in a lot of the movies. But, you know, we're dealing with uber heroic characters here. So the point being, though, is like, there's a lot of Imperial culture that's based on, you know, or Star Wars Imperial culture that seems to have echoes in British colonial history. So, you know, seeing a big ship like that is, you know, kind of terrifying. He also mentioned this British officer by the name of Frank Kitston, who, in relationship to the Aldani population in the Andor show, how the Empire there set up comfort stations and sort of pubs along the routes of the pilgrimages. And apparently this officer, it was quite known for that and wrote a bunch of books, counterinsurgency books, on using these kinds of very tactics. So again, the show doing a great job of pulling, like, real world examples from colonial history, you know, in seeding it into the way that the Empire operates. So anyway, he had so many more different points, and Peter, it was actually really good to read your email, and again, apologies for missing you, and please write in again. I always appreciate your takes.
He closed out, you have this written here, this sentence, interesting that Mando and Book of Boba don't feel like they have as much roots in colonial storytelling. That reminds me of Tony Gilroy, I believe in an interview, said, the stories are all there in history, you just have to pull them out.
Right.
I do think that these Story of the Week shows are much less rooted in real human experiences, and that is what does make them less compelling as human stories and character-driven stories. But, again, I'm having a lot of fun with Mandalorian, and I think that when it's done well, it does pull on those human experiences. I mean, the human heart in conflict with itself. If I have to hear you say that phrase again,
I've only said it four times.
Well, anyway, I edit, so I can delete it anyway.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, Mandalorian trying to let go of Grogu and see him yet not destroy his focus with Luke. So, yeah, I mean, when it's done well, it does call back to these same historical points, these same human experiences. So let's hope that they do even better in season three and that they learn from Andor.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. Yeah, this will be the first Star Wars property out since Andor. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of shadow Andor casts on this production.
Yeah. Patreon shout out time. Special thanks to our Lore Master patrons. We have three tiers, starting at $3 a month for ad-free and early access. But our Lore Masters are our highest tier at $10 a month. And I still can't believe anybody does it, but here's the list, which is growing again. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., David W., Michelle E., Brian P., Nick W., SC, and today, the day we're recording, new Lore Master, Bettina W. If I'm not pronouncing that right, please write in. And thank you all. Thank you to all our patrons for your support. It helps us justify this to our spouses. It helps us make time for this. It helps us get these out faster. So thank you again. And thank you to all our listeners.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you so much.
David, what do we have coming next?
All right. So we've got Maester Anthony is continuing his read along of Clash of Kings, and his episodes usually come out on Thursdays. And depending on when this drops, we might be on the podcast tomorrow. So check out the Hot D feed over at Bald Move. We did a read along with him on a Theon chapter. It's the first chapter where Theon goes back to Pike. It was a lot of fun. I always, I don't know, I think, John, you enjoy it too, but I really enjoy talking with Maester Anthony. He's great.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Great guy.
And it's fun to jump back into the J.R.R. Martin world after being in the Tolkien world and the Star Wars world. It's interesting to sort of see and draw some parallels.
See, I know that Tolkien's really the ruler of your heart because you said J.R.R. Martin.
I did, really, not G.R.R. Yeah, see, sorry about
you know,
that.
You know who your loyalty
real master
with.
Is. Yeah, I've got a ring on. You know, I know where, I know which way to orient myself. We're going to be on another chapter with Maester Anthony, I think sometime in April. And then we've invited him to come on the Silmarillion story. So he's going to be doing that in June with us. Next Tuesday, we've got The Last of Us, episode 7. That'll be out on our main feed. And this is going to be probably a pretty intense episode. So jump over there and check us out. John, Mandalorian coverage, what are we doing there?
Every single week, we are doing full coverage, full recap and analysis for you on both the Star Wars feed and the main feed. And because we can't stop punishing ourselves, we are adding a second show and doing Ted Lasso Season 3 full coverage after March 15th when that starts.
That'll be interesting. We're going to try to experiment with our formatting a little bit to see what we can do. We haven't really covered a comedy show like this before, so it'll be interesting. It's a very different kind of thing.
It's more than a comedy.
It's way more than a comedy. It's Ted Lasso, and we're looking forward to it. I think Season 3 is going to be really exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. We've got an episode of Silmarillion Stories dropping this Saturday, February 25th. It's already out on the Patreon because we just love our patrons, and we give them things early. Then, if you don't have enough of reading from that, we've got a new project, the Book Nook series, with Marilyn R. Pukila, returning Tolkien scholar, who's going to be talking Ursula K. Le Guin, A Wizard of Earthsea, with us sometime in March. It's coming out. So read that book if you want to read it. It's like 200 pages. It's not long, and it's a great read. You can hop on in for the conversation, even if you haven't, because we're going to be doing a non-spoiler section first. Lastly, we have a new project called The Lorehounds Play. The Last of Us Part 1 is going to be our first game. And that's coming out sometime in March as well, after we finish our coverage of the show.
Right, and that show's going to be talking about video games, video game culture, news, that kind of stuff?
Exactly, yeah. Me and Brandon the Bard, host of Time to Explain, which I think is available only on Spotify right now, but maybe that'll change. Who knows? He's going to be joining me, and we're going to be talking video games. Most months, I'm not going to say every month, but most months, right, we're going to be talking about a video game and the relevant industry news.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to that show.
All right, David, I had a great time talking Star Wars with you. It's great to be back in a galaxy far, far away. And we will see all our listeners next week for the new season.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.